The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
It signifies, among many things, our openness to the wisdom of many ages, traditions, and cultures, and our aspiration to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the fire of commitment burning within ourselves and in our world. We light our chalice this morning with words created by the Unitarian community of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We light this flame as a reminder of our mission to be a light to the world, in unity with those who came before us, with whom we are a spiritual family. May we commit to the building of a community of free faith beyond geographical limits and personal beliefs. May we be a shelter to all who need it the most. And speaking of faith beyond geographical boundaries and of those most in need, I think it's fitting that before we light our peace lamp this morning, we observe a moment of silence for the people of Afghanistan. We recognize their extraordinary sacrifices and the sacrifices of all those, including our own military personnel, who struggled to bring stability and peace to a country plagued by war and by civil unrest, a country that now faces an uncertain peace, a peace that unfortunately may be a peace in name only. So let us think of them and keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Now, as we light our peace lamp, please participate responsibly with the words and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, all the people of the world. It's time now for more music. Our gathering song this morning is number 134 in our gray hymnal. Musicians of the First Unitarian Church of Oakland, California will perform Our World is One World. Now, those of you with us this morning via Zoom, we invite you to follow the words on the slides and sing out with gusto. Those here in the sanctuary, please either meditate on the words or sing them softly to yourself. We want to keep this space as free as possible from potentially harmful aerosols. We want this service to be a joyful occasion, not a super spreader event. So, Matt, ready? Okay, our gathering song, Our World is One World.
Oh.
let's make a bridge or wall. And speaking of walls, I'd like to share with you this morning a poem by Robert Frost, one of his most famous poems, Mending Wall. It recounts a tale of two neighbors repairing in string the stone wall separating their properties. Age-old questions haunt the edges of this poem. Are borders necessary or regressive? Are humans naturally driven toward greater connection and cooperation? Or does some old mistrustful instinct always hold us back? With his characteristic wit and adept use of symbols, Frost casts a cold eye on the real and figurative walls that divide us. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not stone upon a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has ever seen them made or heard them made. But it's spring mending time, we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves and some so nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There, where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here, there are no cows. Before I build a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage arm. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go beyond his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. Before Mike presents his message this morning, he'd like to preface it with a song that he's written, right? He's going to be talking about Jericho's walls, and here's a song about Jericho.
I don't want to live in no Jericho, oh no, with walls of fear all around. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, till all the walls come tumbling down. Building walls of hate and bigotry, been building walls like these for centuries. Built to keep us in, built to keep us out. I stand before these walls and shout, I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, with walls of fear all around. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, till all the walls come tumbling down. The building walls of war in freedom's name. It doesn't matter why we share the blame. If you fight for freedom, your freedom is not free. These walls of war, they block the path to peace. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, with walls of fear all around. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, till all the walls come tumbling down. Building walls of death and violence. The city's filled with blood of innocence. You say it's not the drugs, you say it's not the guns. Until they kill your daughter or your son. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, with walls of fear all around. I don't want to live in no Jericho. Oh no, till all the walls come tumbling down. Till all the walls come tumbling down. Till all the walls come tumbling down.
When Donald Trump started talking about building his wall on the Mexican border, it reminded me of the walls of Jericho. His walls were not going to be the only walls. There was talk in Europe about building walls to keep out all the refugees. So I did a little research. According to the Bible story, Joshua marched his army and priests around Jericho, tooting their horns. 7 days, and the walls fell down. Must not have been very good walls. Still, wouldn't it be nice if that's all it took to bring down the walls of bigotry and the walls of hate and the walls of war and the walls of violence and the walls of poverty? But it's not. And I don't claim to have the solution. Let me repeat that. Disclaimer, I don't claim to have the solution. The answers always start with a question. Question: was the Bible story of Jericho accurate? For years, people have tried to find out. Jericho was first excavated by Sir Charles Warren in 1867-68. Then there were other excavations up through 1936. Then Kathleen Warren resumed extensive excavations between 1952 and 1958 and found a series of 17 walls. And she came to the conclusion that in this time of Joshua, Jericho was a heap of ruins on which stood perhaps a few isolated huts. But my takeaway is that they would build a wall for some reason. And for some reason, battle, earthquake, storm, or bad construction, it would fail. And they would build another wall, and another wall, and another wall. Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. But I think they just forgot that they failed and did what they always did. They built a wall. There are all kinds of walls, personal walls. When you close your mind to others' thoughts or feelings or hide out of fear, a word, a glance, a look away, not meant to hurt, but somehow a knee-jerk response, and the next thing you know, you build a wall. When a nation thinks it has the right to impose its will on other countries with tanks and bombs, it's not making friends, it's building walls. When people do the same thing and they think they can impose their will on other people, it builds walls. In 2020, it was filled with violence, racial violence, unrest, with the pandemic and fires on the West Coast and hurricanes and protests and demonstrations, shootings and an election from hell. At times, it seemed like the end of the world. The world saw the video of Floyd George with a police officer knee crushing down on his neck. And there was an immediate cry for new legislation. To do what? We could pass a law that says police cannot use excessive force when making an arrest, but we have laws like that. We could pass a law that says you cannot discriminate against a person because of the color of their skin or their race or their gender or their religion or their sexual orientation, but we have laws like that. It's against the law to kill someone. In 2018, there was an estimated 16,000 murders in the US. It's almost 40 a day. So while we're meeting here today, somewhere in the United States, somebody is getting murdered. Laws don't seem to be the solution here. Don't get me wrong, we need laws. Many things, but you cannot pass a law that will change a person's heart or mind. Can we make a law that says you must be nice? You must be kind. It's against the law not to be kind. Here's a footnote to take away it as useless trivia. Law backwards is wall. Think about it. And after Floyd George was killed, people took to the streets and angry mobs raging against the racial discrimination, raging against the police. Yes, what happened to Floyd George was a terrible crime, but rage is not the answer. Now, this might upset or anger you. Let me pose a hypothetical question for you to ponder. If Floyd George, George Floyd, had been a white man, would there have been an outraged protest filling the streets? Don't get me wrong, I'm strongly agree that Black Lives Matter. So do Asian lives and LGBTQ lives and women's lives and Muslim lives and all lives matter. Here's another question. If I stand in front of a bigoted, extreme right, gun-toting Trump supporter and yell at the top of my lungs, "You are wrong." What is he going to do? You think he's going to say, "You're right. You know what? I'm sorry." No, he's going to yell back at me at the top of his lungs, "No, I'm right." What you send out comes back to you. If you send out rage, you get back rage. If you send out hate, you get back hate. And you build walls. So instead of yelling, how do we get ourselves and others to be kinder and more tolerant, less greedy and polite? The question is, how do we learn? As an infant learning to speak, a mother points to a color and says red. A father points to an animal and says dog. For the most part, we see, we hear, we learn. We see numbers on a blackboard and hear the teacher and we learn arithmetic. Soon we read a book and we hear the words in our head and we learn. As a young child, we have parents and teachers and maybe a minister teaching us the rules, right and wrong, how to behave. And we trust them and take what they tell us as true. And it becomes a wall inside us, a wall of truth. A few years later, you have friends vying for your attention, trying to influence your behavior. Soon your boss, then you have TV and movies, theater, radio, and music. But at some point, hopefully, you realize that how you live is all up to you. And it's ongoing, evolving. And you have to decide what's right every day. Friday, I was driving down 23, and there's a car stopped on the side of the road, just shy of a crest in the hill. And there's a woman behind the vehicle going, waving me around. Do I trust her or do I trust my instinct? I chose the right one. At some time, you challenge what you thought was true, but it's still basically you see, you hear, and you learn. And in this world of media, we are bombarded with words and videos filled with truth and lies. They do not enlighten. Instead, they reinforce the walls. Even NPR, that is supposed to be unbiased, bends the news. And it's up to us to try and make it straight in our minds. Yet another challenge to our wall of truth. Dr. John Corvino is professor at Wayne State University. He's the author of Debating Religious Liberties and Discrimination. He's done several lectures and debates on why same-sex marriage should be legalized. You can find some of these on YouTube. They're very good. I've not read his book, but I've seen several of his lectures and his debates. And it seems to me he does not refer to the evolving nature of society. It doesn't seem to be one of his bullets to, prove same-sex marriage should be legal. But in 1967, I was about 15. My older sister, Debbie, started dating a Catholic boy named Joey. My very Presbyterian mother had a fit. This is 67, you know? Well, a few years later, Debbie got engaged to a member of a motorcycle gang. Mom said, What was wrong with Joey? Mom is evolving, but she is also building a wall. It wasn't that long ago that it was illegal for some, in some states, for a black person and white person to get married. Now it's pretty much socially acceptable. What shifted the opinions? Was it movies, books, movies, TV, music? I think part of it was that life went on and we had more socialization at school, at work. Things got a little better. We danced to Motown and a window opened a little. And we cheered as Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points in one game. And the window opened a little more. And we watched all the Sidney Poitier movies. And for some, we learned a little more. But for others, it built a wall. When I was in high school, I went to North Akron. And this was in the 60s. Such turbulent years. The assassination of JFK, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy. It sparked civil rights demonstrations. We had the Vietnam War, ecology, the sexual revolution, all going crazy at the same time. LA was on fire, and there was a policeman on every corner in Philadelphia. And I was so naive. Smith Acton. In the 6 years I was there, it was junior, senior high school. In the 6 years I was there, there was one black girl who came for her senior year because her parents, a doctor, had just moved to the suburbs. And in my entire school, she was the only black person in 12 years of anyway. How naive was I? My friend and I were waiting for the late bus in front of the school, in front of the high school. And this guy walked up to us and said, "You want to buy some grass?" We looked down at the ground. Why would you want to buy grass? And for those of you who have been in the area for a while, I worked at Chatlin's down in Norristown. One evening, this very intelligent, attractive young black woman named Vivian and I were working, and she complained about her sunburn. And I made a complete fool of myself. But we talked, and she was very understanding. I explained to her how naive I was. And she educated me that yes, black people can get sunburned. What did I know? We could have built a wall, but instead we built a friendship because we talked. I started college in 1970 down in Virginia, and we sang the songs and wore the clothes and had our protests. And my roommate had the mimeograph machine for the underground newspaper. After my second year, I was drafted. And that summer, I went down to Philadelphia to the Navy recruiter all the time until we got all this straightened out. So I wasn't going in the Army, I was going in the Navy. What a mess. But in January of 73, instead of going in the Army, I was in the Navy. And by August, I was a photographer's mate stationed in Japan. I was there a little over 3 years. The Vietnam War was still going on when I got over there. One day, some friends and I went down to Tokyo on the train. We were going to Hibiya Park, which is near, it's in the center of town near the palace. As we walked from the train station, we passed a line of policemen in full riot gear, with their masks and shields and batons. And just past them, we could hear voices from a loudspeaker. As we turned the corner, there was a van with a speaker on top and a communist flag. There were placards with grainy photos that were supposed to represent Americans torturing Vietnamese prisoners. And there was a cutout of Richard Nixon tied to a tree. Here I was, a peace-loving, Nixon-hating hippie, but also a sailor in the United States Navy, being attacked by the communist propaganda. My feelings were all over the place, fear, anger. It was okay for me to protest the war, but I felt so American. It's complicated. It's not black and white. 4 years later, in January of 77, I started back to college. It was a different place. No one cared about the issues that had been driving force 4 years ago. The war was over. There was no longer a draft. Civil rights was all but forgotten. And ecology, what was that? But things had changed. There were more Blacks on campus. Women's lib had sort of kicked in. And people were a little more eco-friendly and aware. So the protests hadn't solved the problem. But it was a step in the right direction. But the walls remain. So how do we take down the walls of hate and bigotry and anger and greed? We start with the walls inside us. For years, I hid the fact that I was gay. But I took that wall down. It can be scary. It's not easy to admit that you might have a wall inside your heart. That's the first step. Next, we need to talk to each other. Not just talk, listen. We need to try to understand. Maybe instead of protesting, we should hold public communication picnics. Yeah. But it requires participation in all sides. And we'll meet in a park instead of in the street. And each group has to bring drinks and snacks to share. And we'll take turns airing our issues and proposing solutions and agree to work together to solve the problem. Like I said, very naive. But doesn't it sound like a better idea? In the Republic of Ireland, there is a statue that commemorates when Bill Clinton visited Dundalk to help negotiate the peace accord there. Excuse me. He said, Northern Ireland, a place where people work and reach out to the rest of the world in a positive way, because a big part of peace is working together for family and community and for the welfare and common enterprise. The statue is two people reaching out their hands in greeting. We need more open hands instead of closed fists. We need more open hearts instead of closed minds. Another trivia. A battery with just a positive node does not work. A battery with just a negative node does not work. A battery needs positive and negative, but it's not the positive and negative that's important. It's what's in between. I think that over time, the walls will fall. Like I said, I don't have the answer, and I'm very naive. I'm naive enough to think that one day the labels will disappear and we will see each other as individuals and not skin color or sexual preference or religion, and the past will be the past. We will live in the present together. And all the monuments that glorify war will be torn down. All of them. And most important, we will stop building walls. Let it be so. Please join me in a time of meditation. I'm reminded of a song by the late David Olney called Women Cross the River. The women cross the river work with tools that are ancient and handmade. They plow the fields in perfect rows, and then they rest beneath the shade. Now we have learned to build out of concrete, out of steel, and our buildings last 1,000 years. But then they are about to fall. But the women cross the river, never learned to build a wall. Be comfortable in your chairs, your seat, close your eyes. And that's your hands. And that's your shoulder. Let's begin. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Exhale. Let go of your walls. Feel them fade away. Exhale. Breathe in. Exhale. Slowly come back.
Thank you so much, Mike, for your message this morning. Whether we're doing a hybrid service or any kind of service, we always leave space for those among us who are experiencing a joy, lifting their spirit up, or a sorrow, weighing their spirit down, to bring that joy or sorrow, concern to this community. We're going to do it a little differently this morning. If you are in the sanctuary and you would like to share a joy or concern, then simply come up to the microphone here to deliver your joy or concern. When we have exhausted all of those in the sanctuary who wish to speak, then we're going to turn it over to Mike McNeil, who will instruct those attending via Zoom on how they can participate in matters of the heart this morning. And we should be able to hear them, right, when they, if they choose to speak. So, give you a little moment here, a musical interlude to think about what you might like to say. And then if you choose to do so, you can come to the front of the sanctuary, to that microphone at center stage, and share it with us. Thank you. Now let's bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. Now let's extinguish our chalice, but not a light of truth, warmth of compassion, or that fire from them. These we take with us into the world to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch ours. And I'm going to let the peace lamp burn a little bit longer because heaven knows we need it. Our closing song this morning builds on the message that we heard. And we've done this before. We're going to do it as a two-part round. Let's remember the words. I think we've done this before, but just kind of repeat after me or think about them. You on Zoom too, right? The first line is building bridges between our divisions. Building bridges between our divisions. Second line, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me? I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? With all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony. So now Mike and I will sing it through once in unison, and then I'll start the round. And when we come to the word reach, that's when you come in, and Mike will lead you in the second voice in this round. Okay? You ready? All you on Zoom? You ready?
Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? With all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony. Building bridges between our divisions, I build bridges between our divisions. I reach out to you and bring out our visions. With friends, all of our voices such and all of our visions, we'll be good bridges between our divisions. I will build bridges between our divisions. I reach out to you as you reach out to me. With friends, all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony.
Concludes our worship this morning, but please stick with us. We have important announcements for you, and then have a very wonderful postlude play for you this morning, a song by Peter Mayer. I'm going to turn the over to State. Hey, School of Ross, to do our announcements.